Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for the Layup, the podcast. This is episode 366 called Alexis Allegra. This episode is brought to you by Fertyl. Fertyl was created by Dr. Jen, a PhD biologist who lived infertility herself. After hitting roadblocks and being handed a loan application instead of answers, she built what she wished existed, the only sterile, FDA-cleared, at-home insemination kit. Fertyl places sperm right at the cervical opening, 1 inch lower than an IUI, with no meds, no prescriptions, and no appointments. The kit includes 3 sterile attempts to time with your cycle. It's as easy to use as a tampon, US made, IVF grade, and HSA, FSA eligible, and it ships discreetly. If you're exhausted, budget stretched, or just want to try something that feels private and empowering, this could be your why not moment. For LGBTQIA+ families, solo parents by choice, or anybody navigating unexplained infertility. So here's what to do. Go to Fertyl.com today, that's Fertyl.com, and use code INFERTILAF for $10 off. That's Fertyl, pronounced Fertyl, but spelled with a PhD out of spite. They told Dr. Jen she wouldn't be a mother, and she used her PhD to prove them wrong. Again, that's Fertyl.com with code INFERTILAF. Thanks, Fertyl.
This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, BELIBABY, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly.
The Work of Art series helps kids understand IVF, IUI, donor conception, surrogacy, embryo donation, and so much more through sweet, affirming stories. And you can get all 3 of my Work of Art books together now in a discounted bundle. Check them out on my website at infertilafgroup.com or go to my Instagram for more info at infertilafstories. And stay tuned for the 4th Work of Art book, which is in the works and will be coming out later this year. More on that soon. All right, friends, today's guest is Alexis Allegra, and her path to motherhood is one of those stories that reminds you just how many twists and pivots this journey can take. Alexis met her person later in life and, like so many of us, thought, okay, let's go. Let's start trying right away. But what followed was nearly 3 years of fertility treatments, chemical pregnancies, failed IVF transfers, and a whole lot of heartbreak and regrouping. In her mid-40s, when things weren't unfolding the way she'd imagined, Alexis made a brave pivot to embryo donation, a decision that ultimately led her to her healthy baby. Without further ado, this is Alexis's infertility story. Hi, Alexis. How are you?
I am so good. How are you?
I'm great. I can't wait to dive into your whole story. So we'll start with a spoiler alert that I know you just had a baby in October.
Yes.
But it was a long road to get there.
It was.
And can you tell me how old you are now? Because that's part of the story, which is so interesting and cool.
How old I am? Yeah, I'm 45.
Okay.
Yeah.
So baby was
born a couple of weeks before my 45th birthday.
Okay. Amazing. So let's start at the beginning. Have you always wanted to have kids?
Yes, absolutely. I started babysitting when I think I was 11 years old. I think back about the fact that parents left me with, you know, their very small children when I was 11, 12 years old. I can totally understand and respect anyone who doesn't feel like parenthood is a journey for them. But for me, it just always felt like that was like my purpose for being here, you know?
Right. Right. Okay. So I'm going to fast forward a whole bunch.
Yeah.
When did you meet your husband and how?
I met him in, it was February of 2020. So right before the world shut down, he was my personal trainer.
Oh, hot.
Yeah. It was like a free session at this gym that I wasn't familiar with. And the second I walked in, I was like, okay, he's cute. And we had our first session together and found out over the course of the hour that we were working together that we had many, many things in common. We both went to the University of Michigan. We were there at the same time. We both work in the fitness industry here in Chicago. Just had friends in common, both from Long Island. Like, we just had all these things in common and couldn't believe we had never met before.
Yeah, that's wild. Like running parallel paths almost, right? So you were destined to meet. I do believe the universe like puts people in front of you that you're supposed to meet. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
When did you guys start talking about family building and were you on the same page about what you both wanted?
Yeah. So we worked out together for over a year before we went on our first date. And then we went on our first date in I think April 2021 and were engaged within 5 months. Being the age that we were, 40, 41, we started talking about those things probably our second date. You know, we dove right into hard conversations and what we wanted. And, you know, when you're in your 40s and you meet the person that you think you want to spend your life with, like, you know who you are, you know what you want. I think it's a different experience than maybe when you're 25 and dating.
Yeah, you kind of cut through all the bullshit, right? I don't have time for this.
Right. It got serious real fast. And we both were on the same page that we know it could be a difficult journey to have children because of my age, but that we wanted to try, but that we were very open to building a family in kind of whatever way it pans out, right? In non-traditional ways, traditional ways, whatever it looks like, we're open to it, but we're going to try it kind of the old-fashioned way first.
Okay. So in addition to your age, was there anything going on with you that led you to believe you might have some fertility problems or anything like that, or
no,
with him?
Except that I just had a feeling. My mom went through menopause really young.
Okay.
And I just sort of had a feeling that it would be hard for me. I just, you know, I didn't think I was going to be the one that easily got pregnant at 41 years old. Like, it happens. I have a, you know, close friend who easily did, you know.
Okay. So tell me what happened when you guys did start to try.
Yeah. So I think we pulled the goalie before we were even engaged. So within a couple months of dating, because again, my age, and we knew we wanted to be together. There was no question about that. And so we just started trying. But because of my age, I also knew there was no reason to wait to see a fertility specialist. Like, let's just get this ball rolling because we're probably going to need help. Right.
Right.
I had my sister who also, who lives nearby, had a friend who sort of helped me get hooked up with a fertility specialist here in the city. And so I kind of you know, bypassed a wait list that would have been very long.
And okay. So you had an in.
I've had an in and got an appointment very quickly. And so that November, right after we got engaged, I had my first appointment and we started treatment, I think that January.
Okay. So what did treatment look like? Like, what did they find out when you went in for your initial consultation and then beyond that?
Yeah. So, I mean, they did the probably, you know, regular traditional testing, right? They did blood work and ultrasound. Blood work showed that my AMH, right, was really, 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 really low for my.
Okay.
And so the initial conversation was like, you're probably not a candidate for IVF, but like you know, you're still getting your period, like, you know, everything, you're healthy. Like, let's start off with a couple IUIs. That's kind of, you know, where most people start. And so in January of 2022, we did our first round of three IUI cycles. And on the third one, I got pregnant and had a missed miscarriage.
Mm.
So within, you know, I think it was my first ultrasound that there wasn't a heartbeat.
I'm so sorry.
I knew it was a possibility, but I think I was so caught off guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I mean, I think people don't talk about, I mean, you know this more than anyone, people don't talk about this stuff enough.
Right.
And I'm sure there are so many women in my life who have had miscarriages, but no one talked about it. And I didn't really know anyone who I could talk to about it. And I didn't know enough about, oh, you have this first ultrasound, which is like the viability, you know, like I wasn't the lingo, all this stuff. I didn't know, right. I was not a part of this community yet.
And right, right, right.
Sort of went into this first ultrasound and I will never forget the feeling of, you know, the doctor saying, you know, I'm so sorry, there isn't a heartbeat. And, you know,
yeah.
My husband and I just being like, wait, what? You know,
I know.
Yeah. So I had a DNC, and that was, I think, like 2 weeks before my bridal shower and then like 6 weeks before my wedding. So it was tough. So we took a little pause from treatment for our wedding, and we'd had a little honeymoon. And then my doctor was actually felt really positively about the fact that I got pregnant pretty quickly and easily.
Okay.
IUIs are not usually very successful. She felt like actually maybe IVF was something that we should go ahead and try. I should say that she had told me during our first appointment together that I had the Cadillac of insurance policies for fertility treatment.
That's so awesome.
Yeah,
you just read my mind, because I was just going to say, was any of this covered for you?
Yeah. And so for us, we sort of had this, my insurance was going to change at the end of this calendar year. And so it just sort of worked out that like January to December of 2022 was with fertility treatment. And I was almost in some sort of treatment every single cycle for probably 10 months of that year.
Wow.
Because we're like, we're going to use these benefits. We're going to give it a good try, but this is not something that we are prepared to do forever. Again, I knew that this might not work. Right. And so, and I also know myself, and that this wasn't something I could keep going for years and years doing. And at my age, like, the, you know, we sort of said, okay, this calendar year, we're going to give it a good shot. And we're going to throw everything at it that we have and
totally
see what happens. Right.
Yeah.
So after our wedding, then we started IVF, and we did, you know, like three or four retrieval cycles, like back to back to back to back.
Oh my God. So how did that affect you physically, emotionally, your relationship? You just got married and you're in the midst of this really, really hard time. So what did that look like for you guys?
It was a lot of communication and a lot of just loving each other through it. I think I did a lot of grieving of the fact that we didn't have time to just be newlyweds, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, we still talk about it now, you know, that we feel sad maybe that we didn't meet at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do feel like things happen for, you know, I'm not going to say that. I don't believe things happen for a reason.
Right.
I mean, that we met when we were supposed to. If we had met when we were in college or 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, I'm not sure it would have worked out. Like, we met.
Yeah.
But it's
that makes sense.
What's sad to me that we didn't have, you know, this time after we got married.
You didn't get that fun honeymoon period when it's just you two and you're not worried. 100%.
But, you know, I also think in many ways it brought us, you know, closer together and made our relationship stronger, because right from the start we were dealt, you know, some difficult hands and we
worked
it together.
Yeah, I think it makes a difference too that you guys knew going into it that it might be hard from the jump. You know, it wasn't like you got married and then you started trying years later and, you know, so that makes a lot of sense.
I think about that a lot too, in the fact that how difficult it must be for younger women who are going through fertility treatment and are probably just shocked by the fact that, like, you know, when they were ready to have children, that it wasn't something that came easily and they had to
totally do
this. Because for me, I was sort of prepared for it. Right.
Okay. So three rounds of IVF, it's or four rounds.
Yeah, we did,
retrievals.
Three like stimulation cycles. And I think there was one or two IUIs mixed in there, because I needed like a month that was a break from, so our first retrieval, we didn't even make it to the retrieval actually, like nothing was happening. There were follicles were not growing. My estrogen wasn't rising. It was just like a epic fail of a cycle. So then changed things up. The second cycle, I think we got one egg retrieved and it did not fertilize. And then it was, you know, coming up to the end of this calendar year. And, you know, my doctor, I from the beginning, I loved my doctor and I always said to her, please tell me when it's time to stop. Like, and be honest with me along the way. Like, if this is futile, I want to know, right? Like, I don't like try to protect my feelings here. If there is a point where we just need to say, you know, like walk away from this because it's just not happening, please tell me. And so we had really honest sort of come to Jesus conversations with her when she would say like, no, I still feel like we can keep going. Like there, you know, things are, there's different things we can do. And so we tried, you know, a third round at the very end of the year and we got three eggs retrieved and all three of them fertilized. So we did a fresh transfer because that was their recommendation, that it was, you know, my old eggs, it was better to just get them right back in.
Okay.
Because they weren't even sure if they would grow to day five and better to just like put them right back in. I had the transfer over like Christmas. I think it was, you know, like either a couple days before, a couple days after. It's funny how you already like those details start to get fuzzy. But, you know, it didn't work. So they transferred two embryos and they failed to implant. And so at that point, we decided we were done with, you know, my eggs with IVF. It was not happening. It didn't seem to make any sense to keep going.
Yeah. How did you guys both deal with that? Because I like to always explore how men and women grieve differently.
Yeah,
maybe you were on the same page, but I'm curious, what did it look like for you guys?
We were on the same page, but I think throughout this whole journey, my husband is kind of always deferred to me, right? Like if I say I would want to keep going, he'd be like, let's do it. If I say I need to stop, he'd say, babe, let's stop. We're done. Like, never, you know, because he understands that, you know, you're putting your body through so much. But we were prepared. I mean, obviously there were a lot of conversations that year with each other, with our doctor, you know, about what this might look like. And so.
And did a lot of your friends, being an older couple at this point, did a lot of your friends have kids already? And how was that? Yeah. Was that hard, like socially and holidays and all that stuff?
So it's interesting. My friend group from high school, college, those friends sort of all had kids fairly easily and at the more traditional time in their lives. But then my friends, girlfriends that I have here in the city are mostly childless by choice. So I have, you know, I kind of had these two, you know, different friend groups, but no one was where I was. My sister, who lives in the city, had kids at a pretty young age, you know, pretty easily. So I didn't have a sort of a community, though I have a couple people in my life who also had some difficult fertility journeys, a friend in the city, a cousin. And so having just those two people that I could go to made all the difference in the world.
Okay. Yeah. So what happened next?
So then, you know, the start of the new year, I was doing a lot of grieving and our conversations had always been, okay, we're going to try IVF, but if that doesn't work, we're probably going to look at traditional adoption. That was sort of where we thought that we would go, because that's all I knew, really. As I was, I think, just Googling adoption, I stumbled across embryo adoption. So there are some people that still use the term embryo adoption, but I think embryo donation is definitely the more preferred term in the community. But embryo adoption is sort of what I stumbled upon. And I reached out to my doctor and I said, is this something that, like, would this work for me? Like, what do you think about this? And she said, I think that could be like the perfect solution for you. Like, I think that's how you could make your family. And
wow. Did you know anybody who'd done it?
No. There was a part of me that was kind of like, how did no one mention this to me before?
Totally.
From my doctor's perspective. But so we started looking into it and, you know, we met with the third party reproduction psychologist through my fertility clinic that everyone has to see if you're then kind of pursuing in this other route. As we're kind of getting started to, you know, like continue our journey in this new way, I found out I was pregnant.
Mm.
Yeah. I think it was the first cycle after we did IVF and I did the transfer. I did not even think about using protection. I wasn't tracking my ovulation.
Right.
It was so far from my mind that that's something that could happen. But we were getting ready to go on a trip. We were going to go to Puerto Rico to like do a trip to just like clear our minds and like, you know, just sit in the sun and drink pina coladas.
Right.
And like a couple days before I was like, you know, I felt like I'm getting my period for like a week and I haven't gotten it. That's so weird. And then I had this moment of like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. The day before we were supposed to go to Puerto Rico and, you know, found out I was pregnant and it wasn't, it, you know, to be really, really honest, it wasn't a happy moment because I didn't feel that positively about it. You know, I just was like, there's no way that this is going to work out. Why? How did I just go through a year of fertility treatment and then like get pregnant on my own and that this is going to work? There's no way.
Right. Cause then you're like anticipating another loss and postponing whatever else you might've tried. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's exactly what happened in a little bit of a different way. You know, we went to the 6-week ultrasound and there was no heartbeat, but because I had no idea when I had ovulated, you know, we needed to do come back, I think, a week later and do another ultrasound because, you know, it's possible I ovulated late and maybe I wasn't further as far along as we thought. And so that one was like much more drawn out. And so that was hard. And even though I felt somewhat prepared for the direction it was going to go, it's still, I mean, it's hard. There's no way around it. It was just as devastating as the first one, not as shocking, but just as hard as sad and sad. But I also, there was this hope because we had already started on this new path and thinking, okay, but this isn't happening right now, but you know, there is this way that we can build our family, I think. And so I had another DNC and then within a couple months, we got connected with an agency that helps families match. So families that are donating embryos and families that are looking, you know, to be intended parents, it matches them. So we got set up with this organization and we were matched pretty quickly. They had told us it could be up to a year and a half. And I think we were matched within like 2 months.
Wow.
And so we, you know, went through the entire process, which involves like lawyers and contracts and testing and all this stuff. We did a Zoom call with the donors.
What was that like? Tell me everything.
So bizarre, but we loved them. And we were like, they were in Boston and they just like super cool and educated. And
this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. You know how February can feel very highlight reel when it comes to love and family? Engagements, roses, date nights, cute family photos, everyone looking like they've totally figured it out. And meanwhile, most of us are like, wait, what am I doing? Whether you're in a relationship, single, building your family, in the wait, or just focusing on yourself, the truth is nobody really has it all together. We're all still figuring it out. I know I definitely am still learning and struggling when it comes to some big life issues. You guys know I'm a big fan of therapy. And it can be such a helpful way to take the pressure off. It gives you space to sort through what you actually want, what feels heavy, and what might be getting in the way of feeling really good. Sometimes a little outside support makes a huge difference. BetterHelp makes getting started really simple. They match you with a licensed therapist based on your needs and preferences, and if it's not the right fit, you can switch anytime. They've got more than 30,000 therapists, and millions of people have used this platform with super high satisfaction ratings. So you're in good hands. If you're struggling and you need someone to talk to, you are not alone. Sign up now and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Again, that's 10% off at betterhelp.com. BetterHelp.com. Thanks, BetterHelp.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Like, we're also into fitness, and they have these two adorable kids that would be like our child's biological sibling, right?
Wow, yes.
And we're like, we could totally see this family being like extended family to us. And we were really excited. And so they had to approve us, right? So we have this meeting, but they were the ones that have to say, we like them, or we want our embryos to go to them. And they did. We both said yes, like, I think probably right away, right after.
That's so nerve-wracking, right? How long did you have to wait until you got the go-ahead?
I think it was like less than 24 hours.
Okay, that's good.
But yeah, I mean, it was the strangest meeting I've ever had in my life.
Tell me about like getting on the call at first. Were you like, hi?
There was a representative from the organization we were working with that sort of mediated and facilitated
the conversation. Yeah.
And then he just sort of like, you know, faded into the background and then turned his camera
right
on. He saw that we were...
Did you have a list of questions and things? And like, was there anything unexpected that was said on the call?
No, and I don't really remember exactly what we said, but, you know, like I said, there was someone sort of facilitating the conversation at the beginning, and then it felt supernatural. And so we were just talking about, you know, like, oh, what did you go to school for? Where are you guys from? And
right,
you know, just that kind of thing.
Right. Did they happen to mention why they were doing embryo donation? Did you guys get into that part of it at all?
This episode is brought to you by Barry. When I first started navigating my infertility and IVF journey, I honestly thought I could keep everything straight in my head. Meds, appointments, hormones, all of it. Very quickly, I realized that was not the case. There are a ton of fertility apps out there, but Barry is the only one built specifically for people who are considering or actively going through fertility treatments like IVF, IUI, egg freezing, embryo transfers, and more. Barry was created by a friend of the show, Irene Alvarado, after she went through fertility treatment herself and saw just how confusing and overwhelming the process can be. With Barry, you can track your medications, appointments, hormones, and symptoms all in one place. They also have step-by-step treatment guides and injection tutorial videos that make everything feel way more manageable and honestly a lot less stressful. The app is packed with support. Dozens of injection tutorials, over 100 articles, 200 FAQs, and if you still have questions, the Barry team is literally a tap away through an in-app chat. Barry has a free version, but you can also try their premium version free for 7 days. After that, it's $12.99 a month or $99 for the year. But here's the best part, guys. Infertile AF listeners get 30% off an annual membership with the code INFERTILEAF when you sign up at barryfertility.com or in the Barry Fertility app. Again, that's code INFERTILEAF at barryfertility.com, BerryFertility.com or in the Barry app. Thanks, Barry.
Just that they had completed their family and had, you know, embryos left over from IVF, and they felt called to help another family build their family.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah, very cool. So we, that, so, you know, fast forward, you know, it takes time to, we had to get all the embryos shipped to our clinic here. And like, it took several months to get everything ready to go. And then we did our first transfer that fall, and I had a chemical pregnancy, which was so devastating.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because, you know, it's like the first transfer and I had this great first beta and we're like, this is it. Like,
oh my God, it's how many embryos did they donate?
Four.
Okay.
And we, you know, I just got that first beta. The nurse called and she gave me my due date over the phone and we were so excited. And I just couldn't believe, like, wow, this, you know, this is it. Like, this is our baby. This is our family. And then 2 days later, went back for my second beta and it had gone down and
they weren't
ready to like call it. So then I had to go 2 days later and get another beta, you know, and that was so hard. I mean, that was as hard as probably the miscarriages, just because we were so hopeful and we were so sure that this is it, right?
Because you're thinking, if the problem is, you know,
my scrambled eggs.
Your eggs and or his sperm or whatever it may be, here's the solution. And, you know, going into it so hopeful. Yeah. So, yeah, I get it. Well,
yeah. So then we did transfers 2 and 3, and the second one failed to implant completely. The third one was another chemical pregnancy. At that point, you know, we were obviously having more conversations with the doctor and mixing up the transfer protocol from fully medicated. Then we tried, you know, modified natural cycle. And during this time, I started to question, you know, like what other things might be going on. Mm-hmm. My sister has severe endometriosis, had a hysterectomy at 35. Mm. I sort of thought that like maybe I had it, but I never had terrible heavy periods. But as I was getting older, my period started to get more painful and I was having more like breakthrough bleeding and pain and, you know, I'm also like a perimenopausal. So like, who knows what's going on? And like for years, like there's so much happening. But after 3 failed transfers and we had 1 embryo left, I saw a gynecologist that specializes in, you know, complex gynecology, right? Endometriosis and that type of thing. And based on my symptoms and family history and fertility journey, she's like, let's go in and take a look. So before the 4th transfer, we did a laparoscopy to go in and check for endometriosis. And my fertility doctor was also in that. My REI was also in the operating room as well. And she did another HSG to check out like the uterine cavity. And we also had agreed that they would check out my tubes, that if anything looks off with my tubes, we just take them out. So I don't need them anymore. And we had this plan, like, we're checking everything while we're
here. Full tune-up. Yep.
Full tune-up. And so they did find that I did have mild endometriosis. And so they removed some lesions and that I had a small uterine septum as well. Mm. So they like, I guess they kind of shaved that. I don't know exactly what they do, but they removed that. My doctor didn't feel strongly that had contributed to any of our failures. But again, while we were in there, we were going to take whatever that we saw. And so the tubes looked fine. So they left those. And then we did our 4th transfer after that, and that one failed. And so then we were,
oh my God,
out of embryos. Yeah.
So rough. So how long has this been since you guys started at this point?
So at that point, we were about 2.5 years in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask earlier and I forgot, so I'll ask now, did you guys give any pause to embryo donation/adoption? Or was it just like, we're all in?
We were all in. The psychologist that we met with, actually, I didn't love her.
Oh.
She pushed a little bit for the egg donation route. And I, for whatever reason, I don't know, it didn't feel good to me that it felt easier for me to have a child that was not biologically related to my husband and me than one that was like related to my husband and not me. For some reason, I worry, I'm sure if I had my baby through egg donation, it would have been wonderful and beautiful.
Sure. No, thank you for being honest about that, because I think that's relatable. You know, everybody has their own path and what they feel comfortable with. And I think that's totally valid for you to think that way, you know?
I just worried what that might feel like. And so also, egg donation is much more expensive than embryo donation. like by a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we talk price?
Yes.
So break it down for us.
Yeah. So embryo donation. So, you know, when you receive human genetic material, you cannot pay for it, right? That's illegal. So you're paying for everything else that is part of the process. But when you do egg donation, you're paying for the full like medical treatment of the woman who is then being is the donor, right? So her retrieval cycle and stims and medications and all of that. When you do embryo donation, you're getting the embryos are already made, right? Mm-hmm. That's already been said and done. The couple mm-hmm. that has them has probably been paying for
storage,
biopreservation, right? The storage. And so oftentimes you're asked to reimburse them for like a year of storage, but you're basically paying administration fees. So administrative fees for both clinics, for sort of like the concierge organization that we worked with, right? That they had a fee shipping the embryos from the clinic to ours, lawyer's fees. So I think all said and done, it was maybe around $10,000. Give mm-hmm. or take. And they were very open and upfront with us about what all those fees were in advance. And you're not paying it all at once, which helps. Like you're paying mm-hmm. this fee here and then you pay the lawyer fee. And then, you know, so it's kind of.
Right.
You know,
does it matter how many embryos there are, I guess, on the for the shipment or no?
No.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
I mean, no, I don't think so. So after we went through, you know, the four embryos that we had, there was obviously a lot of grieving again. But I felt like we weren't done. I knew I was very close to not being able to do it anymore, you know, from so many perspectives, right? Physical, financial, emotional. Like I knew this isn't something that we could just continue to do forever. We had to get on with our life at some point, but I just didn't feel done yet. And so mm-hmm. we reached out to them, to Embryo Connections, and said like, what happens in this circumstance, right? Like, you know, and they were so, so kind and generous and said, what happens is, and they, you know, felt so, so bad for us. And they, like I said, they made us feel taken care of. And they said, you'll go to the top of our wait list. We'll discount everything. And, you know, and we will do whatever we can to find you another match and to find it quickly. And they totally did. I mean, they started sending us matches immediately. This time around, my doctor was even more picky about what embryos and what sort of situation we were going to move forward with. So we kind of went through a lot of matches. Like she wanted these perfect embryos for, you know, and after, I mean, it wasn't long, it was maybe weeks of looking, not months, came across a match that seemed perfect. It was six embryos. And how is this for a non-traditional family? This, the family, the couple that donated to us actually used an egg donor.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. That's a first for this show. So egg donor. And yes. Then that embryo was in turn donated.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Science is so cool. I love
right?
this.
Yeah. It's amazing. So they used an egg donor who was very young, right? So you have really good odds when it's, you know, someone quite young who's donated in their eggs. And so these embryos were like perfectly graded, beautiful. You know, there were six of them. So, you know, a lot of tries. This one took longer. The contracts are going back and forth. It took months and we were so ready to just kind of move forward with this. And it was,
right.
It was really hard. It was a long waiting.
A long wait.
Before right. we had those embryos.
Did you have a Zoom call with them as well?
No. So okay. This couple was actually not interested in the same type of open relationship, which is not what we wanted, but we've never shared last names. We really don't know anything about them. We are all registered on the donor sibling registry so that if and when, you know, it comes time to search to see if, you know, there are right. biological siblings out there, we can do that. And we can make contact through Embryo Connections. I hope, you know, at some point that changes and there's some more contact. And while we were waiting, we bought a house.
Okay.
And, you know, we sort of got all excited about, you know, moving, and it helped. There's nothing better to distract you than like packing up and moving.
Absolutely. And also just moving forward, right? It felt like yeah. if we're not moving forward with the baby piece, we can at least, you know, continue to build the family and lifestyle that we want.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So in January of 2025, so just a year ago, We had closed on our house. And then a couple days later, we had our first transfer with that set of embryos. We moved in a week later. And the day after we moved into our house, I found out I was pregnant.
Oh my God. Boom, 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 boom. It's all happening. It's all happening.
Yeah. And he was born in October.
Oh my God. And it worked. Yes, and it worked. Oh my God, Alexis.
And you know, it felt different from the very beginning. Like I never wanted to admit it. And I certainly never said it out loud to anyone, but I just knew like this one just, it felt different. It felt better. It felt like from the beginning, you know, I had the transfer and then we were like moving all week, painting. We were like doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard this from so many women that, you know, the first time you do all these cycles, right? You like do all the things, you like eat the things, you like are right. So careful.
You don't drink the things.
Yeah. Years down the road,
yeah.
3 years down the road of, you know, these cycles, you're just kind of like, I'm living my life now because I have to, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have to just, and so I was lifting boxes and I'm like, I don't know if I should be doing this, but also I'm moving my body and this feels good to me and it's distracting and, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that, you know, this time that I just like kind of let it go, right? And just did what I needed to do. And, you know, also like, this perfectly graded embryo and like all the,
right. All the things. Yes, exactly. And there's no way of knowing, right? So tell me about him being born. What did that feel like? What were the emotions?
You know, I had a lot of anxiety throughout the entire pregnancy, even though it was a pretty, you know, sort of run-of-the-mill pregnancy. I did have a little bit of bleeding in my first trimester. I had a subchorionic hematoma, which is pretty common, especially in IVF pregnancies. So that was scary, but it resolved very quickly on its own. And, you know, I had a good pregnancy. I worked out throughout, you know, the entire pregnancy. I took good care of myself and, but there was a lot of anxiety and it was really hard to get excited about it because I was so scared that this wasn't going to happen. And about halfway through, you know, getting to that 20 week anatomy scan, when you get to see, you know, that he's okay and everything's going as it should, you know, I started to calm down a little bit. And at my 36 week appointment, found out that he was breech, which, I mean, I knew like he was in funky positions the entire time. He was never in the position he was supposed to be in throughout my
okay.
And then at 36 weeks, they're like, yeah, he's still, you know, he's still flipped around.
Yep.
Head was up in my ribs. So we were given the option of doing a version, you know, where they manually transfer him.
Ooh. Yes. I had two breech babies as well.
Yeah.
So and I had two C-sections.
I did not feel... Something in me was saying like, don't do that. Like, you know, the doctor said, it's not without risk. I'm already a higher risk pregnancy because of my age. You know, it didn't feel right. And so I said, I was very upset about the thought of having a C-section. I really wanted to experience labor and, but you know, like I wanted to experience all of that. But what was most important to me was having a healthy baby. And then, to be honest, the C-section was traumatic. I did not have a great experience. And he, you know, he came out and the cord was wrapped twice around his neck. And the doctor said to us afterwards, it's thank God that you didn't do the version, the ECV, because that probably wouldn't have gone well.
Wow.
So there was something in me that I just said, like, I feel like there's a reason why he's in the position.
Yes, you listen to your body.
And he, you know, it took him a long time to cry after he came out. And there was so much panic from us. The doctor, all the medical professionals in the room were calm and kept saying, you know, the anesthesiologist standing by my head kept saying, that's okay. This happens with C-section babies. It's okay. It's okay. Like, but to me, it felt like, you know, eons before he started crying.
Yeah, totally. All you want is for them to be okay. It's scary. Yeah.
It was so scary. It was the most terrifying couple of minutes. Then he started crying and he was, you know, he was beautiful. He did come out with a broken arm, which was also really sad and just traumatic for everyone.
How did that happen?
Just so the way that he was positioned, like with his head kind of up in my ribs and his arms were up, they had a hard time getting him out.
Oh.
I think they probably had to yank him a little bit.
He's holding on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. I have never heard of that happening before. You think of babies as being so like pliable when they're
You know, so they're like jelly. So like the upper part of his arm, but it healed in 3 weeks because you know, it's basically cartilage.
Right. That's so interesting.
But it was hard. It was the first couple of weeks were really hard because
yeah,
so worried that he was in pain and we had to pin his arm down in his like onesie.
Like, oh, sweet little guy. What's his name?
Yeah, Milo.
Milo. Sweet Milo.
Yeah. But he, he was a champ and he, you know, we went to the orthopedic doctor, I think when he was 3 weeks old and they did another x-ray and it was totally healed.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would love to wrap by you saying, you know, to people who don't know much about embryo donation / embryo adoption, both terms we'll use here. What do you know now that you didn't know then? Or what would you like to share with people just about the process, you know, just sharing knowledge and of course, helping people out coming after us?
Yeah. I mean, I think first of all, that it's just an option, right? Like I had never heard of it until I, you know, fell upon it while I was Googling traditional adoption. So I, you know, I think there are families out there, single women, you know, who want to be mothers. Like there's so many types of families that could benefit from this path to, you know, parenthood. And I think there are so many people that just don't even know it exists. So I would love for more people to just even know that it's a thing, right? Also that, you know, financially, it is a little bit easier to swallow than going the egg donation route. And there's many, many ways to go about embryo donation. There's a very active Facebook group that people post profiles and a lot of people get matched that way. So they do it privately without even going through an agency like we did. Mm-hmm. And it can cost even less that way, right? Then you're just mm-hmm. paying for some lawyer fees and that kind of thing. And then, you know, to me, the most important is that I don't even think about it. I look at this beautiful baby, my son, and I don't, I'm trying not to cry, but I don't think about it, right? It doesn't matter that, you know, he's not genetically related to me. I grew him in my belly. He's, you know, he's our baby. Like there's no doubt about it.
All right, friends, thanks as always for listening. And thank you so much to Alexis for sharing her story. If you guys want to review this podcast, I would greatly appreciate it. It helps a lot with the algorithm. You can go to Apple, give it 5 stars, and then write a really short review. I would be very happy if you did that. Also, please pass this podcast on to anybody who might need to hear it right now, especially anybody in the embryo donation world or considering embryo donation. And if you're looking for a kid-friendly way to explain IVF, donors, and modern family building, my Work of Art children's book series has you covered. You can find it bundled now. All 3 books are bundled at a discount at infertileafgroup.com. And check out my Instagram too at infertileafstories. Thank you guys so much for everything. Thank you for listening, sending love. No matter what you're going through, you are not alone.